I'm Sonia. I'm an alcoholic. Oh my God, I'm totally freaking out. So thank you, Joe, for having me speak tonight, and thank you, Gilbert, my sponsor, for encouraging me to speak at this meeting. So I always just like to say I do not speak for AA as a whole. Like, everything you hear is just my personal experience, and I really, really want to say welcome to the newcomers. You never have to drink again. And that's why I like to tell my story, is because it reminds me of what a gift this program is, and, you know, what it was like for me. So I'm really grateful to have this opportunity tonight. So anyway, I grew up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm 46 years old, so I was born in 1966, so like grew up in the 70s in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. My sobriety date is October 18th, 2003, so I was like 37 when I finally came into AA, and I haven't had a drink since then. So what it was like, both my parents grew up on farms in the Midwest. They're totally sweet people, really good people. They're both, my dad's retired, my mom's getting ready to retire, but they both, like, got their PhDs and, like, devoted their lives to, like, education, and we went to church every Sunday, and I'm really grateful to my parents because they always encouraged me to get an education and to travel. So I'm really... I'm grateful. I have a younger brother, and growing up, he was slightly autistic, and we didn't talk about that. Like, I kind of knew something was off with my brother, but I, you know, everybody just kind of denied it. And then I was a compulsive masturbator, and like knew from. I knew from a young age, like, I was queer. I was inappropriate with, like, the neighbor girls. And I just always felt like I didn't belong in my family. I couldn't ever do anything right. I was, like, really, like, sensitive and, like, either, like, crying or laughing. And just, I knew something was wrong with me. From a young age. So, and actually, like, when I was about 10 years old, I had a hospitalization for psychiatric observation. They didn't tell me that. Like, I didn't know. I'd quit eating, and, like, I was just totally stressed out. I was having panic attacks, but I didn't have words. Like, I didn't, oh, well, I'm a lesbian. I'm having, like, psychological problems. And, you know, there's dysfunction in my family. Like, I didn't have the language for that. I was just, like, freaked out and, like, felt like I didn't belong. Like, how did I get here? So, anyway, I went into the hospital, and my mother was, like, hoping I had a brain tumor because, like, my behavior was, like, just, you know... So they gave me all these awful tests, like this weird brain scan where they had to pump stuff in your veins and a spinal tap, and like they wouldn't let me watch TV, and they told my mother she couldn't come to see me in the hospital. And like no, and then I remember talking to this man who was showing me these pictures, and I was supposed to tell him a story about what I thought was in the pictures, and I just felt like I'm totally saying the wrong things. And like we never talked about it. Like, I went home from the hospital, and my mom was like, you have to go back to school. Quit making yourself throw up in the morning. And I was like, okay. So, and the reason it was an awful experience. So, and the reason I share that is because I remember really clearly, like, making the decision, if I don't feel comfortable, or, like, I don't feel something is right, I am never going to say anything to anyone. Never. I'm just going to act like everything's fine. Like, I remember clearly, like, making that decision. I'm just going to act like everything's fine and, like, do whatever it takes to, like, you know, fit in or, you know, have friends And that's what I did. And I think, like, immediately I was smoking cigarettes after school and skipping confirmation class. And, like, my mom was still never happy. And then I found alcohol. And all this stuff just seemed normal. Like, that's what we did. Like, by the time I got to junior high, somebody's parents would be out of town for the weekend, and somebody would steal a bottle of booze, and, you know, we'd have a party. And I remember, like, I drank alcoholically. Like, I chugged liquor from the very beginning. I chugged liquor. I loved the feeling. I loved the attention that I got, you know, and even though I couldn't remember what happened, like, people were always telling me, oh, this is what you did, you were so funny, and I, you know, I'd throw up all over the place and black out, and, but I felt like this is some kind of a solution for me. I would continue to kind of get the panic attacks, and I had no idea what they were. I just thought something was, like, mentally wrong with me that they didn't find in the hospital. But I was like, okay, booze, like, this stuff is going to work and make it better. So my parents were really strict, so I really didn't have a lot of opportunity to misbehave that badly until I left to go to college. But by the time I graduated from high school, like, I knew something was abnormal with my drinking, and I should probably, I was totally nervous about going to college. And I wanted to do well. I didn't want to disappoint anybody. So I made it through that first semester. I didn't drink that first semester, and then I went to the liquor store and bought a bottle of whiskey because my neighbors in the dorms were having a party, and I remember taking that bottle to the party and taking the top off and taking that first drink, and then I don't remember anything else until I woke up in student health services. So my solution was find the drug dealer on campus. Oh, and I also want to say, like I said at the beginning, like, this is just my experience. I don't speak for AA as a whole. The one thing I have found in here, and the only thing I've done consistently, one day at a time, is I have not taken a drink. I've taken medication as prescribed, but anything else, I was a huge pothead. I tried everything, but I know this is AA, but that's my experience. And if you're new and you can't relate to anything in my story, just keep coming back. There's a bunch of CDs over here on the table. So I just, like, if you can't relate to anything, please just keep coming back, because there's literally, like, millions of stories in these rooms. So I'm in college, and that was my solution. Like, somebody told me, do drugs, because then you don't have the hangovers, you don't have the blackouts. And I was like, well, that makes sense to me. So I went from, I was, like, a straight-A student, like, totally nerdy. My parents were teachers, so we kind of hung out with, like, these, like, you know, academic Lutheran types. I was a very good girl, piano lessons, sang in the choir, like, all that stuff. So, like, within a year, and I think it talks about this in the big book, like, women just, like, you know, it's like a short amount of time, and we just really go spiral down pretty quickly. And that's what happened to me. Like, within a year, I went from, like, straight-A student to, like, buying and selling drugs. I was dating the drug dealer, and his dorm was literally, like, 10 feet from the art building next door. And I couldn't even make it over there to, like, do my pottery class. I got a C in pottery class. So that's, I, And then, yeah, it was. So I barely graduated from college. I spent the next year like in England. I got accepted to this program and just like drank and smoked hash the whole time and like tried to find people that had like mushrooms and acid and stuff. So I tried really hard to manage things because I was looking at myself and I was like, how did I get here? Like I don't think this is the life I'm supposed to be having. All these people I went to college with, like their parents would send them to rehab over the summer, and then they'd come back in the fall, and we'd all be like, you know, getting high, drinking. So I was like, wow, why are they spending all that money? That obviously doesn't work, you know? What a ripoff! So I knew something. I knew something was wrong, and I needed some kind of help, and probably the kind of help they had in rehab, but I could see that didn't work, so I decided to go to massage therapy school. I was going to school in this tiny town, this tiny little Lutheran college in Decorah, Iowa, Luther College, and I had friends that went to Estes Park every summer to work, so I moved out to Colorado with them and worked and went to massage therapy school. And that's one of the things I did to manage was I would like, okay, I'm going to go to school. Here's a program I can do. I'll kind of dry out a little bit. I got to focus on school. So that was one way that I used to like manage my drinking and using. I was a total binge drinker, and I remember like we'd go out for margaritas and stuff after the tests and stuff. But so I got my massage therapy certificate, and then I had I'd been having a long distance relationship with this woman I went to college with, and she had a sister in Golden, Colorado. So it was like, and she was still dating that drug dealer ex-boyfriend that I had been dating. So it was just like total like dysfunctional like love triangle stuff. So anyway, I moved to Iowa City to live with her because work sent her to Iowa City. And we didn't even talk about like our relationship, like if we even had a relationship or what. So I got to Iowa City and she's like, well, we're just roommates. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's when I finally came out as a lesbian. I was like, well, so, my parents were living in town at the time, and I was working in restaurants, and I was just, everything's just crazy. Like, I guess I have time, so like you're getting all the details. So anyway, it took me like 5 years, and then I found a girlfriend that had lived in the Bay Area. So we ended up moving to California, and I thought that was gonna like solve all my problems. Like I thought, well, I drink and use because, you know, everybody's so homophobic in the Midwest. Like if I move to California, then I won't want to drink anymore. Like all that will just go away. Like I'll be emotionally balanced, and I won't need to drink and use anymore. So that's gonna fix everything. So and again, I went back to school. I got a master's degree in Iowa, and used the rest of my student loan money and moved out to California with that girlfriend, and then that relationship didn't work out, and I had a big resentment for like a long time. And I've since made amends to her. And I'm so grateful, because I would not have ended up in California. Like I'm so grateful for everything that happened in my life. Like I really believe, like, if it wasn't for drugs and alcohol and like learning how to give blowjobs, I wouldn't be here. Like I did whatever I had to do, like to fit in. I did whatever I had to do to fit in, and I don't think I would have survived like high school in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Like if people knew I was a big queer, and I couldn't even deal with it myself. So I'm really, everything that happened in my past, I'm grateful for, because I'm here today, and I love my life today. It has its challenges, but I'm so grateful. Like if you had told that little girl in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, like you're going to be living in San Diego and be a big dyke and be like speaking at AIM, I would have been like, what? You know, or even when I sobered up in Oakland, like I would have never imagined this. So anyway, so I moved to California, and luckily that the master's degree like landed me a good job right away. So I got a job with the state like within a year. And that's been a gift. So anyway, it took me like 5 years. Like I said, I really expected like I would just like automatically like become this like, I don't know what I thought. I really honestly don't know what I thought. I was just like, I'm moving to California and that's going to solve all my problems. So little did I know I had to get sober. So anyway, what happened was, I did not know how to have healthy relationships. And I didn't know that my drinking and using had anything to do with, you know, the choices I was making in life or my behavior or whatever. Like, I just, so I ended up in therapy. I'd been seeing therapists, like, on and off. Like since that massage school experience, they were like, maybe you could benefit from like talking to the counselor intern. So anyway, I found a therapist and, you know, had this like total, chaotic relationship with the new girl at work. And it was just like total drama. And so this therapist was like, and I had hardly shared anything with this therapist about my drinking and using because, I knew something was wrong with it, but I thought that's what I needed. I was like, if you had my life, you would drink and use too. You know, really, like, this stuff was put on the earth to, like, help me cope, and how can, and I don't do anything synthetic anymore, like, it's all natural wines, like, what's the line in the big book? So how can there be anything wrong with it? And it's all these other people. That's my problem. It's my family, my ex-girlfriends. Like, it's all these other people, my coworkers. Like, it's all their fault. So anyway, after this relationship, I went back to this therapist, and she said, I had told her I was a little concerned that I was, like, smoking pot every day. And she was like, well, there's this, this was up in Oakland. She's like, oh, there's this place called Mandana House, and they have 12-step meetings, lots of different kinds, and maybe you would like Marijuana Anonymous. And I said, no, I'll quit on my own. It was this girlfriend. She was a bad influence. That's why I was smoking every day. So she was like, okay, well, they have another meeting called Codependence Anonymous. That's for people with relationship issues. And I was like, relationships, that's it. That's my problem. It's all these other people. Like, I think I'd be open. I think I would be open to that meeting. So, I went to this. It was a women's Sunday night CODA meeting up there in Oakland. And I went, like, every Sunday, and I hated it. Like, I was so uncomfortable, but, like, I was so desperate. And I just went, but I was so uncomfortable because I had never been to a 12-step meeting before, and the whole, like, it was really, like, they were really big on, like, no crosstalk, and everybody was, like, super polite and very, It was very serious. It was a very serious meeting. And I was out of my element. Like, I wasn't used to just listening to people and not giving advice. Really, I think that was the basic issue that made me so uncomfortable. I did not know how to listen to people and not give advice. So, I went to that meeting for a year, and I asked somebody to sponsor me, and she said, you know, no, because nobody wants to be codependent. So I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll just get the book, and I'll do it myself. So I got the book, and I started working. They had chapters, you know. I think it was like Codependent's Guide to the 12 Steps or something. So you'd read about the 12 steps, and then, you know, there were questions at the end. I don't know what I did. I mean, it just goes to show, like, whatever, my experience is whatever I put into my program of recovery, like, it comes back tenfold, and it's all good. You know, even if I don't know what's happening, if I do one little bit of work, like, tenfold, it comes back, and it's really positive stuff, even if I don't see that at first. So anyway, I remember working the steps, and I did a four-step, and I didn't realize until after I got sober that I had put on that four-step. I think I might have a problem with, like, you know, drinking too much. So it was like any other Friday night where I called my gay guy friends in San Francisco, and I was stressed out about work or whatever. Like, I don't know what was different about this Friday, but I went into San Francisco and I told myself, I'm just going to have I was like, I'm just going to have a couple drinks at happy hour, and then I'm going to come back. And I would, oh, and the panic attacks are coming back. Because I was not used to, like, California freeways or the bridges up there. I grew up, like, drinking and driving was just, that was the norm. Like, and when you were underage, like, you drank in the car. Like, that's, you know, you can't get into bars, so you drink in the car and, you know, and drive around. So, and it's, you know, it's a lot of country roads. And I just thought when there were drunk driving accidents, it was just bad luck. Like, it had nothing. So the freeways and stuff freaked me out. And that was another thing I was seeing that therapist about. So my plan, this is how I was managing it. I would drive to West Oakland BART, and then I would take the BART train. It was like 5 minutes or whatever to go over to San Francisco. And then I'd be like, well, I'll sober up on the train ride home, like 5 minutes. So I went for the two drinks. I had a couple more. Then we went to somebody's house and we're drinking, like, you know, 20 ounces of vodka and like 1 ounce of Snapple. Went out to another bar, and I remember walking around and, like, I couldn't feel my legs, and then the BART, I remember going to the BART, and I was like, oh, the BART wasn't running anymore, and people kept telling me, the BART's not running anymore, and I was like, they'll run a special train for me, and I had to, like, stumble around and find a ATM, and then, so I got a cab ride, you know, to my car, and then, like, you know, it was one of those drunks, like, where I remembered everything vividly the next day, and, like, I remember, like, going through the red lights, and I was pissed, like, you know, the evening didn't end well, and so I'm just going to go through all the red lights right by the police station, and I don't, like, that next morning, I had never had a DUI, and I always say that's a miracle, but really the reality is I hardly ever had a car, like, and that was, like, and I always made my real estate choices. It had to be close to a bar, like, where I could walk. So, I think that's what happened. Like, in the back of my mind, I was like, I cannot, my car was paid off. I was like, I can't lose this car. If I can't drive, it's really going to mess up my work. And I definitely had the, like, hearing voices experience. And the voice was like, I have been driving the car this whole time that you've been drunk, like all these years. Something bad is going to happen, you know, if you keep doing this. And this is what they call powerless over alcohol. You know, you told yourself you were just going to have two drinks, and look what happened. This is, you know, those meetings, and you've been hearing the steps over and over. This is powerless over alcohol. You need to go to AA. So I was like, oh, crap. Like, I thought my life was over. I thought I was never going to have any fun anymore, and I really thought my life was going to be over. And I was at the point, like, I thought that, you know, I was here, that voice was really clear, and I don't ever want to go back to that place in my life where I was hearing voices like that, you know, because really, at the same time, like, I was hallucinating that ghosts were coming and moving things around my apartment. I thought that ex-girlfriend had, like, killed my cat, like, telepathically, and, like, if I didn't sage my house obsessively, like, the bad spirits were going to come in. Like, I was just, like, I think for a long time, I loved to hallucinate. Like, I loved to take acid and mushrooms. And all of a sudden, I was not planning to hallucinate. And I was not in a good place mentally. So, but I'm so grateful because when I went to, it was just like this, they called it a work-enders meeting. It was like this after-work meeting at that same Mandana House place in Oakland. And I remember that feeling of dread and this is it. My life is going to be over. Because I expected something completely different. I totally expected something completely different. So I walked in and, like, people were joking around and, you know, we're laughing and, you know, I remember this one woman was like, I'm so-and-so and I'm an old lush. You know, and they're just like, and then this, it was just like, I was like, wow, this is different from those other meetings. I was like, I think I found my people. Like, I felt like right away, I mean, it wasn't right away where I was like, yeah, let's go and out for fellowship, woohoo, I'm so happy to be sober. Like, it wasn't that, but it was this feeling like, okay, this wasn't like anything I expected. Maybe there's some hope. You know, maybe there's something here that's going to work for me. Because I've tried every way to manage this, and it's pretty clear to me. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm powerless over alcohol. Like, I think that first step applies to me. So, what I'm grateful for when I was brand new is in that first meeting, there was this guy named Bob, and we became really good friends. And he was this gay guy in AA and went to a lot of gay meetings. And I got sober in October of 2003, so he took me around to, like, all these sober gay parties. And, you know, we'd go to meetings in the Castro and, like, go out for dinner before and I'm so grateful for that friendship. And, you know, because of that, I started meeting other people at meetings. And I actually, like, I called people on the phone list. I'm so grateful that the number one lesson I learned early on was we are not a glum lot. Like, we're here, you know, we don't get sober to have these boring lives. Like, we really... you know, our intention is to have fun. And these people are crazy. I found this really sweet woman sponsor right away. I'm so grateful to her because she kept the steps, like, so simple for me. And, you know, was so patient when I read that first fourth step. But then after a while, I was like, I really need a gay sponsor. So I went to one of those sober parties out in the East Bay, and there was this guy that I'd met at meetings, and I wanted what he had. He was, like, very friendly and outgoing, and like socially appropriate. And like I was at the point, I had no social skills. The first 6 months in recovery, I couldn't talk to anybody without just completely sobbing. Like I would share in meetings, but I'd be like sobbing the whole time. And then if anybody talked to me after the meeting, I could hardly talk to people. Like I just like cried for like 6 months solid. So I'd go to these parties and I would just stand over by like the cookies and just cry. And people would be like, it's going to change. Things get different. You know, your feelings are normal. You know, I was so glad for all these people that just like normalized my experience, you know. So, so I went to this party and, my friend Rossi, his roommate's boyfriend had come to the party drunk and knocked out Rossi's two front teeth. And I was like, you're my new sponsor. Like, I was like, that's just where I was at. Like, I loved those parties. They weren't, it's like I get like judgmental in my sobriety now. And like everything was like, I got something positive out of everything. Like if people were inappropriate in meetings or inappropriate, like, you know, it made me feel like I was a part of, you know, cause my life had been so chaotic. So that I really, it's so easy for me to get judgmental. And I've had service commitments and, you know, anyway, I love AA because it's just like, it's total anarchy, but it works, you know, and it's because people are of service and, you know, people just keep coming back, and I'm grateful for the people with a lot of years that, you know, are just, you know, really, really help at, you know, business meetings or in service commitments to make sure that we are carrying the message to the newcomers. You know, I'm grateful for the, when I was new, like I needed the structure and, you know, hearing that stuff that we read at the meetings and I'm so grateful for how AA works. But I want to talk a little bit about the steps and I really try to keep my program pretty simple. I've always done a lot of service. Number one, I think because I know it forces me to work the steps, you know. But really, I keep this, like that first, like the first sponsor taught me, like, just keep it simple. Like she just, you know, three and seven, she was just like, you just say this prayer and that's it. And I remember thinking, no, but you're, you know, I'd call her with problems and she would say, you know, just say that third step prayer, and I would get so frustrated because I had no ability to turn things over. And really, for me, like, I really feel like the steps 1 through 10 are just to get my head clear so I can, like, sit still for a minute. Like, step 11 for me is that simple. Like, I've learned the hard way, like, I really need to sit and meditate every morning. And that's, I totally have anxiety issues and that, you know, I've been sober like, you know, over 9 years now and around 5 years, I moved to San Diego at like 4.5 years sober and in a year, like the whole economy tanked and we went into furloughs at the state and I'd taken on a huge, service commitment and what happened was I just started having those bad panic attacks again. And they were so bad, like I couldn't drive on the freeways for a while. And I remember I had a meeting for work up in Ontario, up by Riverside, and I took surface streets. I took surface streets all the way there because I was, like, too embarrassed to, like, tell anybody from work. Well, there was nobody to drive with. Like, that was my willing to go to any lengths. And I had found this therapist, and it was a long process to, like, kind of overcome that stuff. But she told me, she's sober, and she told me, you know, you're right around 5 years sober. I really don't recommend that you take a lot of Xanax. You know, this is your opportunity to, like, connect with your higher power. And I was like, oh, God, don't talk to me about the God stuff. Like, don't, like, I'm not into it. And she's like, you need to drive. Whenever you drive, you need to think about God and what God is. And I was like, oh, man. So, but that's, you know, that I got some, like, driving CDs, and she would sit in the car with me, and we would go to the beach, and it took a long time. Like, I was really, and I just started, like, baby steps. You know, I'd go, like, one exit on the freeway, and it took a while. Like, there were a good, like, couple years that I could drive again, but it was just so uncomfortable, and I'd have to breathe and listen to my CDs, and oh my God, okay, and I'd like just freak out. It's just the anxiety thing sucks, but I got through it, and like today I'm driving all over. A couple years, I think, and I remember like a couple years ago I went to Ireland with my parents, and I was just like, this is it, I'm going to rent a car over there and drive around. And we're going to drive around and see Ireland. And we rented a car, and I drove around on those little roads on the left side of the road. And I think that was kind of it. Like, after that, it's weird. Like, my life, like, really opened up. Recovery has been such a trip. Like I said, I've done a lot of service, and that's, when I moved to San Diego, it was weird. Like, the meetings were different. I started having those panic attacks, and I didn't want to talk about it at the meetings because I was embarrassed, and I wanted everybody to think I had, you know, had it going on. And, you know, at 4.5 years, I, like, had all my problems solved, and I was like, I don't know what's happening. So I just, that therapist was like, you need to be honest in meetings, and that's what I did, and I took a service commitment. It was a 3-year commitment with the gay San Diego Roundup, and that, I mean, that was such a great experience. I met so many people, and I, like, it's been over 5 years now that I've been in San Diego, and, like, I really feel like I have friends here, I have a community. Like, this is home, and it's all because of AA and working the program and, like, showing up for service. So anyway, the anxiety stuff was, like, one of the hardest things I had to walk through. But it's weird. Like, it took a while, but all of a sudden it was lifted, and I got some extra, you know, work opportunities, and now, like, I drive up to L.A., I drive all over the place, like, no problem. And I'm still amazed. Like, I'm always like, wow, maybe today's the day that the panic attacks are going to come back. But it's, I mean, it's really, it's incredible, the gifts that we get in here. You know, and the whole higher power thing, I mean, my experience is, there's love in these rooms. Like, I never experienced, like, this unconditional love. And, like, you know, people listen to me when I have these problems that, like, go on for literally years. You know, I have friends in here that will listen to me. I don't think there's that big of a difference between spirituality and science. Like, I'm kind of an academic, so, like, I question things a lot, and I really try to keep that whole higher power concept that simple. That it's like, if I can let go of the fear and let some love in, that's when I'm connected with this concept that we call higher power. And for me, I really work a scientific program. Like, I want to decrease the probability that I'm going to pick up a drink again, because I know I've, like, analyzed it, and I don't drink normally. Like, I have all the symptoms of an alcoholic. You know, like, I'm willing to bet that I'm an alcoholic. You know, the statistics show I drink alcoholically. So I want to decrease my chances that I'm going to pick up a drink again. So I do service. I work the steps. I have the best sponsor in the world. I love you, Gilbert. I love Gilbert. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you're my sponsor. So I do those things. I take the suggestions because I want to decrease the probability of me drinking again. Because I know what will happen if I start drinking and using again. And no matter how distraught I've gotten in my recovery, and you know, I've had, you know, relationship breakups, and you know, I've lost good friends to cancer, and I had to put down my cat like a year ago, like my 21-year-old cat, and have had, you know, changes in jobs and moved and felt really uncomfortable and like I didn't belong. No matter how lonely I get, or how even in sobriety, I can get to these places where I feel disconnected, like even in AA, and I think it just goes back to that, you know, that just that the loneliness, and I don't feel like I fit in. I feel different, and I just have to remember, like, that is normal thinking for an alcoholic like me. And I'm gonna, even in my recovery, I'm gonna feel those feelings, and I don't have to drink over it. I don't have to drink over it. And really, that's the bottom line. I'm here because I don't want to ever have to pick up a drink again. I don't want to go back to, you know, hearing the voices and just, you know, just that total, like, just that hopelessness, like, you know, where I didn't even know what AA was, you know, and I just felt like my life was, like, over. I don't want to go there. So that's why I work the steps. You know, basically, the steps help me, if I'm willing to admit I have a problem, and take the inventory, or just talk to somebody else, or just get out of that isolation and loneliness, and try to find some kind of tool that's going to help me find a solution, then I get a choice. If I can make it to 11 and, like, just sit still for a minute and be quiet, then I get the choice, and I don't have to act out compulsively. You know, that's how the steps work for me. Like, they help me just breathe. And that has helped me get through so much in my sobriety. I think I'm just going to go ahead and wrap it. I'm really grateful for all of you that are here tonight, and thank you so much for keeping me sober. Thank you.